are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
tell people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is.
What's with your life? Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in. I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity. Because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're going to have a great day. And hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather was I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. I know it was here, unfortunately, in Milwaukee. It snowed. It snowed. It snowed on my birthday in Milwaukee, and I was glad I was not in Milwaukee. That's for sure. But if you had to do it, I know you got it done, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is, and we love you for it. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, then you can always go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed, and click on that and follow that and go to the programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. It was good to hear him on last Tuesday, and I'll be listening tomorrow. On Wednesdays from 8 to 10 as well, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, and her program Revive. Thursdays at 7 p.m., Relationships with Joy and Troy. Relationships with Joy and Troy. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that means it's time for an awakening. With Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Time for an Awakening, 8 p.m. on Friday. Saturday Sports Talk, 10 a.m. to 12 noon with Troy Wilmore, Saturday Sports Talk. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., that's right, it's not me. It is Sister POC and her program, once again, Revive, on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. And get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. Also, if you're in the Atlanta area, they have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. You can pick up your laundry detergent, soaps, toothpaste, toothbrushes, batteries, all kinds of good stuff, T-shirts and everything from WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani Tahembe is getting ready to take another group of our people to Ghana, West Africa, and that's going to be May 22nd to June 4th. There is still room available, $3,700. I know now the time is of the essence, but boy, if you'd listened to this and been saving months ago, it wouldn't have been no issue, no problem. But you can still go, May 26th to June 4th in Ghana. You also get a chance to
go to some of the great sites in Ghana and witness the culture. There's also going to be a trip November 22nd to December 2nd, November 22nd to December 2nd, South Africa. He's taking a group of our brothers and sisters to South Africa, Johannesburg, and Cape Town, November 22nd to December 2nd. And then at the end of the month, December 24th to June, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he's going back to Ghana. Going back to Ghana, December 24th to January 4th. And let me get Brother Bomani on, and he can talk to you about it. But please, if you want to and you want to inquire, please give him a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. If you want to see photos from previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see video of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani 2007. All right. Shrine of the Black Madonna. You want books, you want artwork, you want clothing, you want furniture, you want the red, black, and green shoes. It's right there at the Shrine of the Black Madonna in the West End. Number to call is 404-549-8676. 404-549-8676. Also, they have a African Holocaust Museum. The shrine is open Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7 and on Sunday from 1 to 3. The Shrine of the Black Madonna. They also have a history class, Know Thyself, every Saturday, free and open to the public from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. And that's instructed by Brother Olatunji. Outstanding job. But if you can't make it, but you want the information, you can always get the Black History Club presents the Multimedia Library, which you can get. And it has over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. It is 4.5 terabytes of Africa or African enlightenment. So check that out as well. Another bookstore we always promote, and that is the Medu Bookstore. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, which is located near We Buy Black. Which is located near We Buy Black and near and their kiosk. But the Medu Bookstore is right there. And if you don't have the books that you're looking for, believe me, sister will get them for you. The Medu Bookstore. Also, too, we promote Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, Brother Kazimde Ajamu in Lithonia. And the number to call there is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. There is light in the Black Dot, that's for sure. Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us, ULU. The Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family-Centered Economics. ULU. They have the Thursday broadcast every Thursday on Blog Talk Radio, Thursday night, 9 p.m. Please check it out. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789, and you can listen to the broadcast and give some perspective of yourself on what is being discussed, and of course the program of Us Lifting Us, ULU. We pulled our money together. It's a cooperative, and we created Cafe ULU right there in Atlanta, 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza. 2036 Sylvan Road is just right off of Georgia Highway 166, right off of Georgia Highway 166 and 7585. And come and check us out Monday. We're open Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we sell coffee. That's right, brothers and sisters. We got coffee. We're known for coffee. Different flavors, different areas of the world. We got Cameroon Boyo, which is one of our favorites. My favorite particularly, Tanzanian, Kenyan, Ethiopian, where, of course, coffee started. But we got Brazilian. We got Nicaraguan. We got Papua New Guinea. We have coffee, brothers and sisters. You like different types of coffee, different tastes of coffee flavors? Check us out. Also, too, please go to our website, CafeULU.com, www.cafeulu.com, and order some coffee. Order by the bag. Come check us out. Okay? One of the things we sell at Cafe ULU, and that is Ambrosia. That's the vitality drink created by Brother Novak Young. Ambrosia is delicious vitality drink made with all alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic sugarcane chlorophyll, hibiscus, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina. That's right. Check it out. Ambrosia. Akabin Institute. Like I said, I'm going to consistently promote Akabin Institute for what it's about, what it should be about. And I know that if you understand, if you listen to this program, then you understand where it's coming from, and it definitely needs to be supported. So Akabin Institute, you can send money monthly, year donation, whatever it is that you can do, whatever it is that you can give, will greatly be appreciated for the work that is being done. Akabin Institute, you can go PayPal and Cash App, $, and YAAM Baruti, BARUTI, and send it that way. But you also can mail it. You can mail a check or money order to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That is P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Also, too, of course, the complementarity conference will be held May 31st and June 1st. May 31st will be the meet and greet, and this is all going to take place at Sweet Spot, 675 Metropolitan Parkway, in Atlanta, right off of Abernathy Metropolitan Parkway. So that Friday's is the meet and greet from 8 to 11, and it's a $10 donation. And then, of course, Saturday is the Celebration of Love, and that is from 2 to 6. And it's $20 for adults, $35 a couple, and children are free. Vendors, food, you name it, donations accepted. I know I won't be here. I will be in New Orleans at the Black Firefighters training program that we have there, and I go there every year for many years, and but I'm going to donate for some people to attend who probably couldn't attend, who probably should need to attend. I know I do too. I would love to be there at the complementarity conference. Also too, just read about when I was surfing online talking about John Singleton. Some say he passed away, others say no, and the family says no, but where John Singleton is on our prayers. He suffered a massive stroke back in April 17. John Singleton, of course, was the director of Boys in the Hood, a classic movie, as well as Poetic Justice. He also had, he did Remember the Time. He directed Remember the Time video, which is my favorite Michael Jackson video, simply because the only white person in the video was him. That's why, to me, I love that video. Because of the song, Remember the Time. He also, of course, did Rosewood, Higher Learning, Shaft, Baby Boy, to name a few. And so our thoughts and prayers are with him. Juneteenth Day is coming up. Juneteenth Day, that is going to be although it's not, June 19th is Juneteenth Day, but the celebration will be the week before here in Atlanta, and I will give more details on Juneteenth, where it's going to be, and some of the things that are involved. So be listening for that Juneteenth Day. But this Saturday, Abakasan Sumsum, African Spiritual Warfare, the 16th annual, this Saturday, and it's going to be at Sweetwater State Park in Lithia Springs. Sweetwater State Park in Lithia Springs. It starts at 12:30. You know, wear white, bring flowers and candles, and honoring our ancestors. It's an outstanding program. I'm going to try to get Mama Marimba or somebody on to talk about it on Wednesday, and definitely by Friday. It is this Saturday, the Abakasan Sumsum African Spiritual Warfare, raising up the spirit of Dr. John Henry Clark and all those other. I've attended Abakasan Sumsum for the last 4 years or so, and they've been outstanding. I was even a participant in one of them 1 year. And last year was dynamic. Man, Brother Kwaku did an outstanding job of channeling Dr. John Henry Clark, I mean, outstanding. It was beautiful. The whole spirit, the whole thing, it's just outstanding. So check that out. It's open to our brothers and sisters. It is open to our brothers and sisters. African Spiritual Warfare, Abakasin Sum Sum. Inye Sesim. The Inye Sesim, of course, is the daily revolutionary thought that we need to talk about. Today, of course, is the 29th, but yesterday, the 28th, and it's a good one. And so I'm going to read three of them. I know May 1st is Wednesday, so we come back, but I'm going to read these last three. The 28th, April 28th. If they call you Negroid, then I should be able to call them Mutinoid. We should come up with our own scientific terms unless the oppressed can't name the oppressor. I call them Mutinoids. That's a scientific term. Brother Oshawa Kwesi. We used to say old fake, cracker, pale face, whitey, hunky. Being stuck in the minority status of mind, seeing them as powerful, potentially benevolent humans without moral guidance from us, confused victims of a reactive frustration aggression. We now say ICE people, destroyers, psychopathic racists, born killers, Urugu, because we know the history of their spiritlessness, their acts of spirit side. We see freaks of nature. We know that history does not change a thing's essence. It reveals it. We learn simple lessons uncovered by our scholars, too many to name, too many unnamed, who sacrifice all to reach back deep into others and our past to explain the present condition of our negation from the outside in. They studied the genesis and evolution of the problem. Through them, we saw through the few bad apples to one corrupted, seedless core. We learned to see it as them, not him or her, not the Klan or World Health Organization, but the nation of shepherd kings, of Greeks, of Romans, of old and new Europeans, of Caucasian beings. We now see our mistake as a people of spirit, often too forgiving for our children's good. We try to measure them one by one when they're only one. They perpetuate that idea of individualism. Individualism, a white desire, but collectivism is an African imperative of a must. But they are one. They are one. And they operate in that way. Affirm, I name our oppressors for what they are. Affirm, I name our oppressors for what they are. April 29th. Racial integration is the enemy of unity because it requires integrating group to be submerged, weakened, and scattered as minorities in a society in which the majority rules. Claude Anderson. The majority of Africans are being subintegrated into a European society because Europeans realize that at this time, little else can be done to those of us who are not being physically contained or otherwise disposed of. When you are a power minority in a world which hates your very presence because it reveals its lies, yet you must somehow be incorporated because there are too many of you to ignore. You had better believe that your assimilation will be no better for your mind than your physical enslavement was for your body. While a few of you will receive the larger, more desirable crumbs and prefer seats at the fringes of privilege, as a people, you will be kept relatively powerless. However, propagated to embrace being subintegrated into a xenophobic, envious, projecting people who naturally cannot tolerate real difference and who, if for no other reason other than this, are determined to genetically annihilate you, is to invite your removal from physical existence. It is to invite your removal from physical existence. Recognizing this and knowing that power is innate, we must know that subintegration is a choice and the worst possible one for African people who want to remain whole. To demand to be incorporated into inferiority and therefore become inferior is not the mark of a self-loving people's wisdom. Affirm, I have no inferiorizing aspirations. I have no inferiorizing aspirations. April 30th. Thus, everywhere over the earth, where we find people crowded back by climate or conquest to bleak and barren districts, we see the change of human nature from gentleness to ferocity. Drusilla Dungy Houston. Drusilla Dungy Houston wrote the book, The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire, in 1926. Her quote is most profound. She says, I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts that Harvard and Yale or even cowardly scholarship in our race dare not refute. How can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? Outstanding quote. Drusilla Dungy Houston. This is true, but innate or inbred temperance or personality determines the intensity, form, and direction which the ferocity takes. If confined, in almost all cases, venting toward those closest. Proximity is a critical human interaction variability, especially for acts of love or hate. When released, however, we are able to see a people's nature, for there is a fundamental difference at the level of spirit between those who are naturally loving enough to continue to contain their frustrations among themselves as they work to solve the issues to benefit of all involved, and those who cannot relinquish their anger through reasonable meditation and find solace in a sense of self inventing on in any and everybody they encounter, except those they have good reason to fear a reciprocal retaliation from. Our story and their story, respectively, bear witness to this fact. Sadly, if those who are accustomed to venting on others comes to oppress others and forcibly contain them in bleak and barren physical, mental, and spiritual places, then those so confined, once deprived of any meaningful active consciousness of self, will inadvertently vent their frustrations on each other in the same way as their captors. That's why you see the self-hatred that is so deep. As victims of this confusion, we must find constructive ways to stop hurting ourselves and effective ways to vent against what forces us unto and against each other. Affirm, I do not vent against innocence. Affirm, I do not vent against innocence. The Yenye Sesim, the book of revolutionary daily thought. I hope everybody is doing fine. Hope you had a great weekend on the real side. I know I did. Had a lot of fun. I know also, too, that we... let me get rid of that. Okay, that's cool. Today, we're going to pay tribute to the Honorable Dr. Bobby Wright. Dr. Bobby Wright was a clinical psychologist at the Garfield Park Mental Health Institute. After his passing, it was renamed in his honor. And I had the opportunity to see Dr. Bobby Wright. In Milwaukee, they had just built the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Just. One of the first events that was held there was the Black Political Convention. Saw Ron Daniels, saw a number of people, heard a number of people. But the dinner speaker on that Saturday night was Dr. Bobby Wright. I didn't know Bobby Wright then, but I was struck. I love to hear him speak. I have got tapes of Dr. Bobby Wright, and I listened to him. To me, his psychopathic racial personality is one of the most dynamic essays. I'm going to read that later, but I'm also going to let you hear Dr. Bobby Wright as well, you know. And when he talked about menticide, he gave the example. He said, you're watching TV. You're watching the basketball game. You're watching Notre Dame play your favorite team. Notre Dame got the rebound. And the announcer on the TV says, the rebound by Notre Dame. Now here come the Irish. Here come the Irish. You know that's Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish. Here come five black dudes. Here come the Irish. Exactly. Menticide, a deliberate attempt to destroy people's mind with the intent of exterminating them. Dr. Bobby Wright mints no words. Straight, no chaser. He was a man to be respected and admired for who he was and what he accomplished and what he did. He coined that phrase, menticide. Let us play Dr. Bobby Wright's Black Menticide and White Psychology, and we'll come back and we'll talk more about it, and then we'll read the essay, and then we'll take callers. Tell us how you feel, some things that I've said or read, or your perspective. That's right, your African perspective. All right, this is Dr. Bobby Wright. This was, I think this is right before he passed, when they had that opening in Milwaukee where he was the keynote speaker. That was 1980. I think he passed in 1982. Of cancer, although I believe they killed him just like they do all others. Dr. Bobby Wright.
Thank you for those kind words. Habari Ghani brothers and sisters, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. There was a great deal of feeling that I'd be here tonight, and Seattle, in spite of all the jokes I make about it, I have a long history with some of the people here in Seattle. For a long time, Zakiya here. I remember Zakiya as a very young person, a very young student, who came into our independent school in the 1960s. And out of that school, we lost 17 students who were her classmates, 17 young black brothers who were students of mine, Fred Hampton probably being the most famous one. So I stand in blood before you, and I take that very seriously. I'm a very feeling person. I have a very great deal of love for black people because unlike most blacks who you read about and hear about, I've never experienced all those negative things from black people. I've been extremely well loved throughout my life. I've never had all the things that happened to me that have happened to, that I read about happening to other black people. And so I've dedicated my life to just one objective, and that is to assist in the liberation of the minds of black people and therefore liberation then of their bodies. That is my sole reason for being. And it is the only reason, of course, that I would appear before you tonight. And I would hope that we would have a chance to really understand one another. Most certainly I would say things that will alienate some of you because of your personal lifestyle. That is not my intent. I have no fight with black people. I never in my life have used words like Tom. I never in my life have used words like nigger. I'm not that type of person. I have one enemy, and that enemy is the white race. No other enemies do I have. And therefore, I'm at total war with that enemy, the enemy who has for 362 years waged unrelenting war against my people. And I have no time to have internal conflicts. I do take issue with brothers because of their political position, but it's not personal. It's a political position. And so with that being a background, I'd like to say to you that the most important thing that has happened to me was left out of the present of the introduction, inadvertently. And that was the fact that I grew up. I was born and raised in an all-black town in Alabama. For the first 17 years of my life, I had all-black teachers, all-black role models, black people who loved me, who protected me, who raised me, who fed me, who nurtured me, and also who educated me. And I would like to say, as I say all the time, that there's a difference between education and training, and therefore, the difference between education and training, I'm fortunate because I was educated by black people, and I was trained at the University of Chicago. Unfortunately, black people, as part of the mental style process, black people are more impressed with the fact that I was trained at the University of Chicago than the fact that I was educated by black people in Alabama. And with that, I'm going to take a sort of different tag with men aside tonight because, and I'm going to lay it in some ways that all of us can sort of understand it, although we may lick. This will be published in about 3 weeks. In about 3 weeks, Third World Press will publish what I'm going to talk to you about tonight. And I'm just going to introduce it. And you'll have to get the publication from Third World Press, and it will be out here. I would also like to say to Karumu and all the other brothers and sisters who I worked with over the years that I really appreciate being here and being loved so by them. I mean, there have been many times I've been places which my welcome was not as good as it was tonight. And in fact, there was a time when I had to almost run out of the place. And they were always stood tall and stood behind me. Tonight I'm going to talk about menticide. And I'll start by telling you one of the problems in talking about a theory. One of the most difficult tasks of a black scholar, one of the most difficult tasks of a black person who thinks, is to be able to analyze the influence of racism or racist on black behavior and attitudes, be able to do that analyzation, and at the same time escape the almost irresistible Western scholarship protective barrier. Western scholarship in the Western world, that is their protection. They have a barrier, and they call it scholarship. And it protects them so well that even when you begin to study racism, you end back up studying the victim, doing an analysis of their victims. That's what is happening. So there's no question that this analysis of the victim methodology has been a major scientific development of white scientists because it effectively leads away from the cause of our condition, which is white pathology. It leads you away from that once you get into it because the way the scholarship is set up. One of the results is that the position is usually taken that one should not even imply to the black masses our truly weak position for fear of immobilizing them. In other words, you shouldn't talk about all the conditions of blacks because you immobilize them, which are a condition which already exists. While others take the position that whites have power over blacks at all. Now, this is due to the all-powerful but non-existent white concept of free will. Free will, which has us in all sort of trouble. All sort of trouble, this idea that you got free will. Namely, that people always have choices, and you have choices since you have free will. Therefore, you can be held responsible for your behavior. And that free will, of course, that I spoke to last night, that free will, what it leads to then, it leads to a great deal of negative behavior, and it leads to rugged individualism. Therefore, to give you a type of analogy, and I'm not trying to be humorous. I know many things I say are humorous, but I like to use analogies as African people have done throughout history. Is that the analogy I have is that whites have us fighting over deck chairs on the Titanic. Got us fighting over deck chairs on the Titanic while they have taken the lifeboats and gone. And gone. And some brothers and sisters want to argue on what class we're in. What class we're in. So we had a brother like Brother Wilson back at the University of Chicago, who's the head of the sociology department that I said last night, who wrote this book, The Decline and Significance of Race. Race is declining in significance, now it's class in economics. And of course, the mere fact that a brother is married to a white girl means that race declines every night. especially when they go to bed. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand me. I'm very aware of what happens when you expose the human personality to dangerous stimuli. I'm a very serious behavior scientist. I'm very aware of that. However, there comes a time when the risk of exposure is insignificant when compared to the alternative. And to paraphrase a type of mental health truth, which is a mental health truth, the greatest pathology in the world, the greatest sickness in the world, is for people to believe in something just because they wish it to be so. That's the greatest pathology you can have. For you to believe in something just because you wish it to be so. And that's what most of us are. For example, if you take suicide. Suicide. Let's deal with that for a minute because that's what the publication will be about. And I want to use that just to deliver this. In the not too distant past, suicide in the black community was virtually non-existent. In fact, when our comedians were really comedians, they used to joke about it. How can a black commit suicide jumping out of a basement window? Things like that, you know. The fact that the black committed suicide by attacking the policeman's club with his head. Things like that, you know. Somebody in my town where I grew up, if somebody come up talk about somebody kill himself, everybody be looking for who killed him. But that's a further understanding if you begin to do this analysis. of the things I have to say right away, and then maybe this will give you some understanding of where I'm from, coming from. The most serious mistake you can make, along with that greatest pathology, the most serious mistake you can make is to utilize, try to use white definitions, to try to define and understand black phenomena, black behavior. The most serious thing, to use white definitions. He who defines rules. If you accept my definition of the world, I will rule you. And so you see, look here, we're in this science lab. No question about it. Look here. See, since I've been in school, they don't even add more stuff to that table. Table wasn't bad enough, hard enough as it is. Now they had something else they were talking about. Now, what they tell you, oh no, Dr. Wright, this is objective. This is objective. This is science. This is science. You know what science is? A group of white men and women getting in a room and say, this is the way the world is. If you disagree with us, we'll kill you or we'll flunk you. That simple. That simple. So this is no more objective than anything else in the world. This table up here is some science and white people gotten together and said, this is science. Here's a definition of this, here's a definition of that, here's that. And let me tell you about definitions. They do not have to correspond to any reality as long as they are useful in understanding some phenomena. That's the whole thing about science. Science does not have to deal with reality. Do not have to deal with a reality. Astronomy cannot prove anything. No one's been out there and touched a star. No one can, but they can infer. And then once you accept that definition, then you have a science called astronomy. Brothers and sisters got astrology. What sign are you? I knew that was some reason we couldn't get along. They even dropped that one on us. Astrology. What sign are you? And I had some students in the free school once to do a research. I want you all to get on the L, which is the subway. And I want you all to get on the L. And I want you all to where the blacks ride, because, you know, unlike you all, most of you have not been to Chicago and got into a cultural shock. Because we got block after block, mile after mile, of nothing but black folks. We got more black folks in two housing projects than you all got in the entire Northwest. So when I talk about black folks, I'm talking about black folks, you know. And we don't have that. Who are we? Why are we here, you know? So I had them to get on the subway where all the blacks ride and pick up the newspapers and bring them back to class the exact way they brought. They picked them up on the air. The exact way they picked them up, bring them back to class. We're doing this research. Sure enough, every paper that they picked up on that subway, and I mean they picked them up, the papers there were about 10, 15 cents. Every paper they picked up, it was either turned to Ann Landers or turned to the astrology page. Astrology page. So right every day, if you notice, watch this. Whenever we get papers, that's how serious people, that's how their mental side is programmed up. And mental side, as I told you, is defined, as the sister told you, is defined as the deliberate and systematic destruction of a group's mind, with the ultimate purpose being the extermination of that group. He who controls minds, controls behinds. He who control the brain controls behavior. Very simple. Nothing complex about that. So you have blacks, if you look on the paper, they'll turn straight past the front page, stop at Ann Landers, and then go to the astrology page, and then put the paper down. Put the paper down. And even men of you, I'm not serious here, carry on serious discussions about astrology. Now let's just deal with that mental style process. How can you deal with astrology when they admit that Julius Caesar decided to put a month in? You know, here they screwed it up so much that we got February, 28 days. And by the way, that's our month. They gave us the shortest month in the year. And I'm making a suggestion here tonight, and I hope you carry it on. Let us start having in January 1st, because I'm getting tired of traveling for 30 days every year. Let us start in January 1st, I'm very serious, having Black History Year and White History Month, White History Week. Seriously. Let's stop Black History Month. Let's stop it all together. It's time to stop the nonsense of this. Why should we study Black History 1 month out of a year and we black folks? That's mental side. You don't hear Italian month, History Month. You don't hear Irish History Month, Jewish History Month. Number one, they ain't got no history. But anyway, you don't hear. Yes, they do. Let me stop you. Yes, they do have history. Yes, they do.
That's Dr. Bobby Wright. That is that is from Black Menticide. and White Psychology at a presentation he did in Seattle, Washington. Dr. Bobby Wright was born 1934 in Hobson City, Alabama. He died April 6, 1982 in Chicago. During the mid-60s, he worked as a truant officer in Chicago public schools and led successful challenges to racist hiring procedures for American African teachers. His political work has been credited with helping lay foundations that later enabled the election of Chicago's first American African mayor, Harold Washington, in 1983. Two of his scholarly works have been described as highly influential by the 2013 National Conference on African Psychology, American African Psychology. The Psychopathic Racial Personality in 1974, published and then republished in 84, and Other Years as one of a series of essays, is outstanding. The other, Menticide, The Ultimate Threat to African Survival, in 1979. He has been classed in the racial school of black psychology of the time, those who develop a self-consciously independent framework in opposition to the dominant worldview stemming from Europeans, many of whom were influenced by Frantz Fanon. And of course, you heard me quote Frantz Fanon. He was Algerian, although did some work in South Africa. But to me, his, you know, Wretched of the Earth and White Mask, we wear them. Well, to me, the best one is his quote on about crackers, about Europeans, about Caucasians. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior. And any information, even though there's a plethora of information to prove otherwise, they ignore it. They don't accept it. And they try their best to continue on as planned. Cognitive dissonance. They feel they're superior, and there's nothing else that we can do or say about it. And that's a fact. By contrast with traditionalists who worked with American Psychological Society of the time and critique did not correct, or reformers who were partially independent and appealed to change to both black and white cultures. He also wrote The Black Child, A Destiny in Jeopardy, which is also part of the book of essays, the collection of essays that he has that I have here. His contribution to political process concerning the continent of Africa and Pan-Africanism, he was a Pan-Africanist. Dr. Bobby Wright, he contributed to the political process, and they renamed the Garfield Park Mental Health Institute in his honor, the Dr. Bobby E. Wright Comprehensive Mental Health Institute on the South Side of Chicago. Overall, his work emphasized the need to recognize psychological warfare that has been waged on us for Africans to define themselves in their terms while analyzing the psychology of Caucasian supremacy or Caucasian extremism, as I like to say, not only its victims, and to develop a doable and durable social theory and associate institutes to change the politics of mental health. Dr. Bobby Wright. We got a caller. Good morning, caller 678. Good morning.
Good morning, my brother. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Dr. Rogers. How you feeling today, dear brother?
Hey, well, you know, it's like that song by Frankie Beverly, I'm back in stride
again. Yes, sir. Back in stride again. Hitting it hard.
Yes, yes,
I love it.
How you doing, my brother?
I'm doing fine, man. I'm doing fine.
Good. I'm so glad you played that Bobby Wright piece. That's real. That's so significant. I mean, there's so much stuff in there that we're not listening to, that he has said to us many times before his death, that needs to be highlighted. And
yes,
we really need to follow that, you know.
No doubt. No doubt.
So I thought I'd call you because I wanted to just mention one or two of them, maybe see what the feedback was. And one of them that is so critical that Dr. Wright said is that we need to start studying white history.
Yes.
And we haven't done that.
Right.
And as a result of that, there's a lot that we don't understand because we haven't studied that in a critical sense.
Right.
Now, I know that there are others who have, you know, Dr. Marimba Ani, I was reading Rugu, she did that,
mm-hmm.
And others like himself and Brother Jake Carruthers did it, you know, but we need to do it too,
right.
You know, a lot more and a little bit more intensely. So I really applaud that, and I kind of thought maybe I wanted to mention that to you and your listeners that, you know, we need to take that on as a mission.
That's right.
And really study that critically.
Right. And really look at them analytically for who and what they are and what they have done and what they continue to do. And why we can't, because we've been fooled and tricked. And we have put so much energy, Dr. Rogers,
yeah.
into believing that somehow we can appeal to these people morally, that they will do right and act right and be more receptive and more giving and share.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
And
how many of our leaders have made that mistake, thinking that that was going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we know about Dr. King and others, you know, who mm-hmm. meant well. They meant
yes.
well, but they're not going to do that. They
right.
can't.
You know, it's not in them to do so.
You know, you remember the book? You remember the book by what's the brother's name? What was his name? Two Nations.
Andrew Hacker. Two Nations: Separate, Hostile, and Unequal. Andrew
Hacker said in the beginning, he said, white folks not going to do that, man. He said, because they got a thing that they think you're going to come back and get them for slavery.
That's right. That's right.
He said that. He said that in the interview.
He said that is an innate fear that they have, that if you come to power, you'll do to them what, you know, you'll do to them what they've done to us. And that is not us. That is not our nature. We just want to go ahead and continue with our lives. You know,
that's right.
We're not seeking retribution and revenge. Hell, but we just want you to get out of our way, get out of our lives. Let us think independently. Let us think self-determinately. Let us think sovereignty. You know,
that's what
we want. But yeah.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, Andrew Hacker.
Listen, I'll be back on tomorrow live. I would love to have you come on and talk about your trip to Africa too.
Tomorrow, I will do that. I will do that, Dr. Roger. Okay.
All right.
Thank you for always being there, brother. Peace to you. Thank you. Dr. William Rogers and his program, Black Reality Think Tank, every Tuesday at 8 p.m., Tuesday evenings, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., right here on Time for an Awakening Media. Dr. William Rogers. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, more on the history of a tribute to Dr. Bobby Eugene Wright. Stay right here with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Broken glass everywhere. People on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breezes blow. A crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbage pails, used to be a fag hag. Such a dance to tango, skipped the life and dangle. A silk on print to seem to lost her senses. Down at the peep show, watching all the creeps, so she can tell her stories to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so sedated, she had to get a pitch, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much, it's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job, there's a strike at the station. Me on King Kong, standing on my back, can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac, a mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane, I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me, call, I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My son said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school, cause the teacher's a jerk, he must think I'm a fool. And all the kids smoke reefer, I think it'd be cheaper if I just got a job, learn to be a street sweeper. I dance to the beat, shuffle my feet, wear a shirt and tie, and run with the creeps. Cause it's all about money, ain't a damn thing funny. You got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. They pushed that girl in front of the train, took her to the doctor, sewed her arm on the game. Stabbed that man right in his heart, gave him a transplant for a brand new start. I can't walk through the park cause it's crazy after dark. Keep my hand on my gun cause they got me on the run. I feel like an outlaw, broke my last glass jaw. Hear them say, you want some more? Living on a seesaw. Don't push me cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. Say what? It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. A child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind. God is smiling on you, but he's frowning too, because only God knows what you'll go through. You'll grow in the ghetto, living second rate, and your eyes will sing a song, cause deep hate. The places you play and where you stay looks like one great big alleyway. You'll admire all the number book takers, thugs, pimps, and pushers, and the big money makers. Driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you wanna grow up to be just like them. Smugglers, scramblers, burglars, gamblers, pickpocket peddlers, even panhandlers. You say, I'm cool, I'm no fool, but then you wind up dropping out of high school. Now you're unemployed, all non-void, walking around like your pretty boy Floyd. Turned stick-up kid, but look what you done did. Got sent up for an 8-year bid. Now your manhood is took and you're a Maytag. Spend the next 2 years as an undercover fag, being used and abused to serve like hell, till one day you was found hung dead in a cell. It was plain to see that your life was lost. You was cold and your body swung back and forth. But now your eyes sing the sad, sad song of how you live so fast and die so young. So don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Yo, Mel, you see that girl, man?
Yeah, man.
Yo, that sound like Cowboy, man. Yo, what's up, buddy?
Yo.
Hey, where's Creole and Raheem, man?
They lay upstairs cooling up.
So what's up for tonight, y'all?
Yo, we can go down to the field, man.
Let's go check out Junebug, man.
Hey, yo, you know that girl Betty?
Yeah, man.
My mom's got balls, man.
Not what?
Again, she got hurt.
Free, don't nobody move nothing. Y'all know what this is. Get them up.
What?
Get them up.
Yo, man, we down with Grandmaster
Flash and the Furious Five. Grandmaster Flash, what is that, a gang?
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Following Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Wednesdays. Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy, 7 p.m. on Thursdays. On Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday night at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yeah, that was a good piece, isn't it? That's one of the baddest raps of all time. The Message, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. And you can see by that piece, it's talking about menticide, what Dr. Bobby Wright was talking about, menticide. Dr. Bobby Wright's outstanding great essay, Psychopathic Racial Personality, was written in 1974. And it was just relevant today as when he wrote it then and been reprinted in 1984. I'm quite sure another copies have come out since that time because what this brother states here is on point. The psychopathic racial personalities. In a bullfight, after being brutalized while making innumerable charges at the movement of a cape, bulls are colorblind. Bulls don't see red. The whole aura of the bullfight started in Spain after the Moors were kicked out of Spain. Some use the bullfight as an analogy of killing the bull and eating the testicles, of getting rid of the Moors, the dark-skinned men and women who occupied Spain for 700 years and was the only light, only information that was being disseminated in Europe at the time. Because, you know, the bull, in fact, on the symbolism, Slitz malt liquor, the bull was the symbol. But if you look at the image of the bull on the can, the bull has no nuts. The bull has no penis, except the tail is up. The tail of the bull goes up when the bull is defecating or the bull is getting it in, literally. Okay? So, but yet, that's not there, and that's another subject. But in terms of the bullfight, the bull doesn't see color. He chases anything that moves. That's why the matador in all his regalia, the rhinestones and so forth, how he looks, and he just moves the cape, and the bull charges at the cape. The matador is perfectly still because he's not chasing. He's not hit. He doesn't even see the matador until the moment of truth. But let us further go on with Dr. Bobby Wright. In the bullfight, after brutalized while making innumerable charges at the movement of a cape, there comes a time when the bull finally turns and faces its adversary, with the only movement being his heaving, bloody sides. It is believed that for the first time, he really sees the matador. This final confrontation is known as the moment of truth. For the bull, this moment comes too late. The experience of American African people, or African people all over the world, presents an analogous situation. For hundreds of years, we have been charging at the banners that are held by the European matadors. These banners have been represented by concepts such as democracy, capitalism, Marxism, religion, and education. The banners remain constant as long as Africans were assets. However, with technology and worldwide industrialization on the rampage resulting in a further exploitation of Africa's resources, which in turn produces an increase in Africa's natural consciousness, Africans are now a threat and a liability to Caucasians, to Europeans. Therefore, the banner held by the matador represents only one concept, genocide. As a consequence, the major research that Caucasian scientists are involved in today is genocidal in nature. Nuclear warfare, population control, medication control, genetic engineering, psychosurgery, electrical stimulation of the brain, and the highly complex science of behavioral technology, and AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, HIV, Ebola, all the other things that are affecting African people adversely. See, when he wrote this, AIDS wasn't even known of at the time. And you knew he would have picked upon that. Indeed, it is Africa's moment of truth. It is time for us to look at the European, the matador. This presentation is based upon the following very simple premise. In their relationship with African people, Europeans are psychopaths, and their behavior reflects an underlying biological transmitted proclivity with deep roots in their evolutionary history. The psychopath is an individual who is constantly in conflict with others or groups. He is unable to experience guilt, is completely selfish and callous, and has a total disregard for the rights of others. This premise is supported by overwhelming scientific evidence. Martin R. Delaney, a book that came out in 1968. Du Bois, should have been 1868, Martin R. Delaney. Du Bois, 1896. Franz Fanon, 1963. Marcus Garvey, 1967. Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, 91. And Chancellor Williams in 1971. There is a scientific dictum which states, everything that exists, exists in some amount, and if it does exist, it can be measured. One of the best methods that can be used to measure the psychopathic trait of the Caucasian is observing and analyzing their universal overt behaviors and attitudes towards Africans. However, in doing so, since Africans have been enslaved and colonized by Caucasians, a very subtle psychological problem is posed, of which every African should be aware. Intellectual insight about Europeans does not ensure that there will be a corresponding change in our behavior and attitude towards Caucasians, particularly when there is a threat involved. For example, everywhere one finds us and them in close proximity to each other, whether it is in Chicago, Zimbabwe, Atlanta, wherever, the Caucasians are in control. Yes, brothers and sisters, Caucasians are in control in Atlanta. Caucasians are still in control in South Africa, in Namibia. It's not about the numbers. It is about that evil mindset of domination and control and manipulation. One of the best methods that can be used is to measure the psychopathic traits of the Caucasian in analyzing their universal overt behaviors and attitudes towards us. However, in doing so, since we have been enslaved and colonized by them, their very subtle psychological problem is posed, of which every African should be aware of. Intellectual insight about Caucasians does not ensure that there will be a corresponding change in our behavior and attitudes towards them, particularly when there's a threat involved. For example, everywhere one finds Caucasians and us in close proximity to each other, whether it's in Chicago or in Zimbabwe, they are in control. Yet Africans rarely question this extraordinary universal phenomenon, which defies every known law of statistical probability. It does, because wherever it is, they're in positions of authority and control, and we are in a subservient position. If you're able to travel outside of this country, but you don't really need to do that, because all you need to do is look at what happens here. You can look at what happens here in small communities, particularly in the South, that have a majority of our people, but yet Caucasians are still in control. Yet Africans rarely question this extraordinary phenomenon. In fact, Africans denounced those who simply raised this question with admonitions such as, we should not be racist and treat them as they have treated us. In fact, Caucasians are not going to allow us to treat them as they have treated us. So that requires no discussion. However, the subject of African racism should be discussed. A functional definition of racism could be the oppression and exploitation of a people because of their culture. I don't use the word race because there's only one race, the human race, of which African people are the fathers and mothers of, but their cultures. And what Europeans have done is impose their culture on everybody. Europeans went around the world imposing their culture. And if you did not accept their mores, their ways, you were eliminated. You were killed. They imposed their culture. Using this definition, it is very clear at this point in time that Africans cannot be racist because of their lack of power to oppress anybody. We can't do anything. I mean, we can be mad, but we can't. They move. Caucasians are now gentrifying our communities. What? What are we saying about it? Not a damn thing. Indians, Chinese, the Chinese, what they're doing in Africa. What are we saying? Not a damn thing. And of course, the lawmakers that we have, Congressional Black Caucus and others, are neutered. They're weak. They're silent. African intellectual enlightenment does not always lead to genuine insight and can be very damaging to the intellects, as reflected by the behavior and attitudes of many eminent African scientists. For example, Dr. Kenneth Clark, 1968, has spent his life making a fortune studying the victims of Caucasian oppression, his own people, and now speaks to irrelevancy of color. Dr. Alvin Poussin, 1972 and 74, who seems to be the Johnson Publishing Ebony Magazine, publishing's psychiatrist in residence, ignores the widespread genocidal programs directed against Africans and writes such trivia as the difference between sex and love, blacks and Jews, an appeal for unity, and why blacks kill blacks. Blacks kill blacks because they've never been trained to kill whites. I repeat, blacks. Africans kill Africans because they have never been trained to kill Caucasians. Therefore, it is outside of their experience. Historically, the European system has engaged the killing of Africans because Africans have been led to believe that they are part of the psychopath system. They simply follow the practice. Dr. James Comer is another African psychiatrist whom the psychopaths have so overwhelmed that he has moved, as his book suggests, beyond black and white. Cobbs and Greer follow this tradition of Africans studying themselves rather than their oppressors. And you heard Dr. William Rogers mention that what we need to do is study the European. Look at my favorite book, Urugu. Look at what the Dr. Mirma Ani has done, the work that she has done. And there are many others. That look at, hell, they're Caucasian. Look at Michael Bradley's book, The Iceman's Inheritance, The European Sexist, Racist, and Greedy Nature. Yeah. Therefore, it is outside their experience. Historically, European systems have encouraged the killings of Africans because Africans have been led to believe that they are part of the psychopath system. They simply follow the practice. Cobbs and Greer follow this tradition of Africans studying themselves rather than their oppressors by including in black rage that whites make blacks so mad they kill themselves. Caucasians make us so mad that we kill ourselves. And that's true. Who has control of media? Who has control of imagery? Who has control of the airwaves? African scientists generally rationalize their investigation of proof to white scientists that blacks can be scientifically objective. On the subject of objectivity in science, this author agrees with Dr. Jacob Carruthers, who, in his brilliant essay, Science and Oppression, states that science is not objective, nor is it neutral. An African scientist who moves outside of the psychopath's approved course of study takes the chance of being labeled unscientific, emotional, biased, etc. Additionally, funds are only available to African scientists who support the approved course of study themselves. Many very competent African students who are naive about Caucasian scientific inquiry are flunked out of schools because of their insistence on studying the etiology of African problems, the psychopath, rather than the effects. African students must be taught that Caucasian educational institutions are the matador's cape that protects Caucasians from African scientific inquiry, which would expose an unthinkable depth, an unspeakable depth of psychopathology. In order to understand the psychopath personality, one must differentiate between three classifications: the neurotic, the psychotic, and the psychopath. The definition of the psychopathology has been established and adhered to by the World Health Organization's International Classifications of Diseases. The contributions of African people in determining these classifications are almost non-existent. Generally, the neurotic is a person who suffers a great deal over problems that are handled fairly routinely by well-adjusted personalities. The major problem for neurotics is their inordinate amount of anxiety. However, in contrast to the psychotic, the neurotic has very good reality contact. The psychotic, in addition to being out of touch with reality, has severe malfunctioning and many times has to be hospitalized for long periods of time. This leaves the psychopath. Scientists agree that there is no science without classification. For the disciplines of psychology and medicine, it is not necessary for labels and diagnoses to have concrete reality, i.e. they can be retained if they are useful in understanding and treating diseases. For example, the majority of patients who are admitted or committed to mental health institutions in this country are diagnosed as being schizophrenic. Although there is no general agreement among psychiatrists and psychologists on a definition of schizophrenia. However, even though it is not required, this presentation does have concrete reality, namely Europeans' behavior and attitudes towards us. Behavioral scientists generally agree that the outstanding characteristics of the psychopathic personality are the most are the almost complete absence of ethical or moral development, and almost totally disregard for appropriate patterns of behavior. Let me read that again. Behavioral scientists generally agree that the outstanding characteristics of the psychopathic personality are the almost complete absence of ethical or moral development and an almost total disregard for the appropriate patterns of behavior. This characteristic has led to a misunderstanding of the psychopath as someone who does not know the difference between right and wrong. This belief is not true. Psychopaths simply ignore the concept of right and wrong. By ignoring this trait in Caucasians, the lack of ethical and moral development, Africans have made and are still making. He wrote this in 1974. And we're still making a tragic mistake in basing the worldwide African liberation movement on moral persuasion. It is pathological for Africans to keep attempting to use moral persuasion on a people who have no morality, where culture is the variable. Because of their lack of ethical and moral development, there is no conflict between Caucasians' religion and racial oppression. The Caucasians have historically oppressed, exploited, and killed African people, all in the name of their God, Jesus Christ, with the sanction of their churches. It is generally overlooked that the Ku Klux Klan is primarily a religious organization. Further, Africans should never forget the image of the Pope blessing the Italian planes and pilots on their way to bombing Ethiopian men, women, and children who only had spears to defend themselves. This behavior is not surprising since Caucasians use scriptures to justify their treatment of Africans. According to the book of Genesis, Noah placed a curse on his son Ham, forever dooming all of his descendants to be the servants of the servants of God. Naturally, Caucasians interpret Africans as the descendants of Ham and themselves as the servants of God. If one follows this interpretation, an interesting issue arises. If Ham was black and Noah was his father, and then Noah was black,
and only allowed animals on the ark, since Caucasians denied that blacks and whites sprung from the same source, then we know from an impeccable source how Caucasians got there. Unlike other extreme pathological syndromes, only a very small percentage of psychopaths are committed to mental health institutions or hospitals, and another small percentage ending up in penal institutions. The majority of psychopaths function very well in a society, particularly that they created. I'll repeat. The majority of the psychopaths function very well in society that they have created. The majority of psychopaths function very well. They are generally average or above average in intelligence and have engaging personalities. In addition, they are usually very impressive and competent with no feelings of insecurities, anxiety, or any other manifestations or psychoneurosis. They appear to be very honest and humane, but really have no concern or commitment except to their own selfish interests. Psychopaths will consistently make commitments that they have no intentions of keeping and show great indignation and anger when their integrity is in question. Africans in the United States learned this lesson very well during the civil rights confrontations of the 60s. The Caucasian sheriffs and judges showed their greatest hostility when Africans began to quote the law to them. This behavior can only be clearly seen in Caucasians' attitudes toward African liberation. Caucasian liberals give lip service to African liberation while arguing that Africans are going too fast. Caucasian conservatives think Africans have too much already. The psychopath is usually sexually inadequate with a very limited capacity to form close interpersonal relationships. The European sexual inadequacy psychologically explains the constant projection of Africans as super sexual beings and as lacking in any sexual inhibitions. Yet, it is Europeans who streak, mate swap, participate in orgies, and so forth. All of their sexual behaviors is a desperate attempt to achieve meaningful relationships which constantly, due to their psychopathic makeup, elude them. Caucasian sexual dysfunction has produced tragic consequences in our community. They have attempted to achieve sexual gratification by such methods as raping African women. Their rationale is that African women are oversexed and invite their attention. Historically, the justification for castrating African men was their animal passions had to be contained. In fact, in 1893, Frank Liston of Chicago, a Caucasian doctor, posed that castration would conserve the energy of the American African community. The sustained sexual atrocities committed against us by Caucasians have no parallel in history. There is no scientific explanation except under the rubrics of psychopathology. Psychopaths' inability to accept blame or learn from previous experience can be easily proven. They never accept blame for Africans' environmental conditions, which are clearly the result of Caucasian oppression. Even to this day, the ghettos of Chicago, Milwaukee, Atlanta are still in existence today. And who do they blame? It's your community. On the contrary, Africans are being held for the deterioration of their communities, even though all of the property is Caucasian controlled. In addition, municipal services are withdrawn from American African communities, and most of these communities have been used up before Africans are allowed to move into them. In the fields of mental health and drug abuse, Caucasians are at their psychopathic best. The United States government's position on drug users is that addicts are cured when they cease antisocial behavior, regardless of how long they have been to maintain on methadone or other drugs. Dr. Jerome Jaffe and Edward Sine, the czars of the U.S. Drug Administration's program, with the assistance and protection of American addicts and ex-addicts, have created one of the most destructive programs in our community, the Methadone Maintenance Program. The United States government is the largest supplier of drugs to addicts in the African-American community. Sine takes the position that African addicts should not be given placebos or just plain orange juice. If sexually frustrated suburban Caucasian housewife can be given sugar pills rather than real drugs, why can't American African addicts be given orange juice without the methadone, since they cannot tell the difference? Sine states that giving
African addicts, pure orange juice without the methadone is unethical. Therefore, it can be deduced that doctors, such as Sine, believe that it is honorable act to give us drugs. And we know the history. Like I said, this is written, brothers and sisters, in 1974. Think about all the things that have transpired. He died in 1982. Think of all the things that have transpired. He is on point. Community mental health centers are in such disarray that space does not permit an adequate discussion. They are underfunded and therefore understaffed, with the usual staffing pattern consisting of all Caucasian professionals and all low-income non-professionals. Additionally, almost every existing center uses the medical model, i.e., the belief that the major problem is the African person without any regard to his circumstances or environment. Furthermore, community centers and government agencies are heavily influenced by the American Medical Association, which is one of the most racist, overtly racist, and probably the most powerful organization in the United States. A very serious and vicious funding game is played with African mental health centers, in which the U.S. government supplies funds, with the stipulation being that the American African community must find matching funds. Needless to say, there are usually no matching funds found for American mental health problems and programs. Therefore, the federal government's funds revert back to the government. Psychopaths also reject constituted authority and discipline. The presence of this trait in Caucasians has grave implications for us who seek legal solutions to their problems. This especially applies to us in the United States, who are the world's only legally created group, created through the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, which can be repealed at any moment by the Congress or declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. As long as this condition continues or exists, African people in the United States will always be legally 5 minutes away from once again being enslaved. For Africans in the United States to place their destiny in the hands of Supreme Court justice is an extreme form of psychological blindness and a pathological rejection of the history. The Supreme Court of the United States has always used the prevailing Caucasian political climate as a criteria for dealing with questions of race or culture. For example, as a result of the infamous 1954 school desegregation decision, Africans has lost an estimated 35,000 teaching and administrative positions in the South. Former African principals of African schools are now janitors in integrated school, and the same thing is going to happen to African teachers in the North. Eventually, the Supreme Court is going to find the 1954 decision unconstitutional, but by that time, Caucasians would have taken over all the black schools, including black colleges. The psychopathic behavior of Supreme Court justice is consistent with that of other Caucasian professionals, doctors, lawyers, judges, politicians. They consistently take advantage of Africans without any guilt, anxiety, or threat to their self-esteem. For example, in the African community, Caucasian doctors are the largest group of drug pushers. They prescribe unneeded and dangerous drugs and perform unnecessary operations. Caucasian scientists use Africans in very destructive studies, such as the Tuskegee experiment, in which African men were denied treatment for syphilis and evidence suggests we're deliberately infected. The role that the Caucasian scientists play in African oppression should not be surprising to Africans, because Caucasians have historically been the planners of African oppression, and as a rule, they never ask why, but only how. This behavior of Caucasian scholars, Jensen and Shockley, are examples of intelligence in the service of racist institutions or psychopathic behavior. Jensen and Shockley are simply following the psychopathic tradition of Hegel, Carlyle, Galton, etc., that have continued for hundreds of years. History is replete with examples of Caucasian scientists professing the inferiority of African people. The eminent Dr. Samuel Cartwright of Louisiana diagnosed Africans who ran away from enslavement as having a disease of the mind. Dr. Robert Bean, 1906, of Johns Hopkins University proposed that Africans had smaller brains than Caucasians, since brain efficiency depended upon the number of positions of nerve cells and fibers in the brain, Africans had less capacity for development than whites. Dr. Carl Jungs, one of the Caucasian giants of psychology, stated that Caucasian American sexual inadequacy was due to their having to live together with a barbaric race, us. The Caucasian use of scientific justification for racial oppression can be found even in the most inadequate libraries. What makes Caucasian scientists such as Shockley and Gentry so dangerous to African communities today is that they not only do they present a so-called scientific proof of the threat, but they also offer solutions. With the present level of technology available to them, this should not be taken lightly. However, it is self-defeating and useless for African scientists to debate the question of race via mass media with Caucasian scientists such as Shockley and Jensen. Caucasian scientists simply want to exposure for their ideas. Additionally, it is pathological for an African to discuss with Caucasian the question of whether or not they should exist. For all other people, simply raising the question about their existence is tantamount to a declaration of war. This, then, is the psychopath's personality of the matador. The one constant is the ever-changing world is the behavior of Caucasians in the relationship to Africans. This is a very challenging problem. And an inevitable question is, what should we do? One dilemma posed for African people is the constant appeal for liberation through channels created by them, by the psychopaths, namely democracy and communism. A cursory examination of both systems immediately points out the futility of Africans giving them any more consideration. Africans must accept the reality that for Caucasians, democracy and racial oppression are not conflicting ideas. The fact that Africans have been enslaved for over 350 years by a democratic form of government should be evidence enough. Furthermore, a democratic government presumes inherent equality of races. It does not provide methods of liberation for those who are not equal. Communism can be dismissed as an alternative with even less discussion. For communism to be viable requires the cooperation of the masses of Caucasian people, and we know that ain't going to happen. With that as a primary condition, communism needs no further discussion. However, since Africans have finally rejected democracy as an alternative by attempting to burn down its bastion, United States, there are signs that it is now time for the Marxists, the communists, to try to contain them. Throughout Africa, Marxists have enlisted African heads of state as allies. These African leaders go to great lengths to deny that our struggle is racial. Yet the only true independent nation on African continent has those headed by Caucasian invaders. One of the greatest tragedies is the leadership between Africans and Arabs. For Africans to accept Arabs as anything but Caucasian invaders is a pathological denial of reality. In the oil crises, the traders from the north, the Arabs, treated Africans worse than they treated some European nations. This behavior is consistent for Caucasian psychopaths. No white nation in the world encourages African immigration, but there is a great effort throughout the world to integrate Africa. As I'm reading this, brothers and sisters, I hope you see what is being done and what has been done. I hope you see. Again, the question of what to do. There is no evidence that Africans and Caucasians can live in close proximity to each other in peace without Caucasians attempting to oppress and exterminate us. In fact, there is overwhelming evidence that even Caucasian ethnic groups cannot live together, i.e. the Irish and English, the Greeks and Turks, the Arabs and Jews. Behavioral scientists generally agree that there is no known cure for the psychopath. In fact, it is a widely held belief that the only successful treatment for the psychopath is incarceration, radical psychosurgery, or death. That is the only thing. Therefore, Africans are at war with psychopaths. And unfortunately for us, we must understand that violence is the only way. Brother Lerone Bennett proposed in his brilliant essay entitled Time, Space, and Revolution that it is hard to tell time by a revolutionary clock. Likewise, it is difficult to tell direction by a revolutionary compass. Unfamiliar with the terrain, an instrument has disorientated Africans, and as a result is very inadequate and dangerous behavioral patterns. Some have become catatonic and do not move at all, but wait for divine intervention, while others place their faith and energies in charismatic guides who are just as lost as they are. These Africans seem to ignore Brother Bennett's depressing, truthful warning that history does not forgive those who lose their way. Still others fantasize that Africans have reached their destiny and their destination and attempt to act accordingly as free men. Some persevere and pursue old beaten paths that inevitably lead back to the starting point. But there are others whose minds have moved past the psychopath's imposed boundaries and have begun to blaze new paths toward African rendezvous with destiny. So it was with Shaka Zulu in the 1700s, Jean-Jacques Dessalines in the 1800s, Martin R. Delaney in 1852, Bishop Henry Turner McNeill in 1880, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey in the 1920s, Malcolm X and H. Rat Brown in the 1960s, and imposing Chancellor Williams in the 1970s. The answer to Africans' problems can be found in the works and lives of these African heroes. They all looked at the matador or the psychopath for what he was and what he is, and they moved against him. The struggle must continue, and we will conquer without a doubt. I'm going to open up the phone lines. We got a caller. 602-602. Good afternoon.
Yes, my brother. Wish you good afternoon. So you are so correct, my brother, because what I realize is these people benefit from our demise. As you say, they have set up a system in America that they benefit from our oppression, as you say.
Yes.
As the brother said, because the food we eat, we don't produce that
right.
food. Cracker, he got to touch that food before we put it in our stomach. And he has been known to poison people. You know, the clothes we wear, we don't manufacture those clothes. And he gave the American Indian smallpox.
Yes.
With smallpox. Yeah, the medical system, as you said, you go to the doctor, you got insurance. Oh, you know what? I need to do a major surgery on you. Maybe ain't nothing wrong with you, but he gonna benefit when he cuts you with that knife. Obviously, the educational system it suck. Okay, it miseducate black people, to orientate us against ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we have no protection in this system. So you can't call upon the police. You say, you know what? I need you to come and address the situation because you may get shot.
That's right.
So you are so correct. The penal system, they benefit from that too. You go to jail, give them jobs, give the judges jobs, the prosecutor. You know, so the whole shebang benefits from the demise of our people here.
That's right.
These people...
It's by design.
Yes, they are sick. They are demented. And I tell you, as Brother Wilson said, Amos Wilson, he said, these white folks are genetically disposed to violence.
Yes.
And should be caged and given an occasional shot of Thursday, you know. Take care, my brother.
All right, my brother. Thanks a lot, Marcus. You have a blessed day, brother. Appreciate
All right.
you. Peace. 646-646. Good afternoon.
Hey, Osa, give me a minute, all right?
Okay. I'll give you a minute. You got it. You got it, Wes. I mean, you got it, Jay. You got it, my brother. You know, there's another essay in here that I like. Also, too, another piece that I had I wanted to play. I may get a chance to do that because it's only like 10 minutes. And... But there's another piece in here in this little small great book, and that is The Black Child. He wrote this, another essay called The Black Child, A Destiny in Jeopardy. And I think I'm going to have to at some point bring that out and read that because I think that needs to be understood. That,
hey, Oshie,
that is our future. Yes, brother. Yes, brother Jay.
You know, I'm sorry to say this to you, Oshie, but you should really, really be ashamed of yourself talking about the daddy in the manner in which you eloquently say how no good this stinking bastard is. The white man is not going to be happy with you. Oh, this god daddy is going to rain on you something awful. You know you're not supposed to tell the truth about a no good filthy stinking cracker the way that you have today. Hey, listen. If out of all of this time, over 500 years of us being in this country with this no good, filthy, stinking cracker, if we don't get it by now, we ain't never going to get it.
No,
it's just that plain simple, man.
No, you know, Jay, you're right, because it has consistently shown us, consistently, over all these years, of all our begging, all our pleading, all our marches, all our sit-ins, the damn prayers, all of it. Reconciliation Bush, all of that. They constantly have shown us who and what they are and what they're capable of doing to us. But yet, we keep holding out hope. We keep hope alive.
Persistently. You know?
Yeah.
Persistently looking for him to treat you good. I had a young man that I was working with who father never treated him right, who basically all his life neglected him, abused him, and all of that. And I had to one day sit down and tell him, man, you could love your father to the day you die, but you got to leave him alone or you ain't never going to be a healthy individual.
Right. Right.
Sometimes in life, there's just people who really just don't like you.
Yeah.
Who basically have no good use for. Who are not good for you. And the best thing you could do is get to the point to where you just leave them alone.
Right.
You know, and what we as a people have never gotten to the point is to recognize that the white man is no good for us, to recognize that he is in a person that wants to treat us fairly, to recognize that he's our moral enemy, and that we must do whatever's in our power to eliminate him from our lives, and just move forward.
Right.
It's a hell of a thing.
It really
to
is.
To come to acceptance that you must cut the throat of your enemy.
Well, see,
and
the
problem is that folks don't feel that way, brother.
And why? The theology they imposed on us.
Of course.
That is the crux, the main crux of the damn problem, the religion that they have imposed on us. It's just like Bobby Wright said, and I was going to play that one. It's a really good one because he's in Atlanta talking about this and how tough it was in Atlanta to do something revolutionary. In fact, I think it's only 10 minutes, so let me try to play this. I'm going to stem myself a little bit, okay? I'm going to try to play this, and then you just hang on, Jay, okay?
All right, please do.
Okay. This is Dr. Bobby Wright's religion has always been a deterrent to revolution.
This one might be stopped soon. But anyway, now, let me just finish up, okay? I have some recommendations. I didn't get a chance to get to religion because I know I'm down in the Bible Belt. I grew up down here. This is the Bible Belt, you see. Harold spoke to it. You see, you have to make a distinction between religion and spirituality. What they have us is in religion. And it's a very fundamental question I'm asking you then. If all of us agree that white people didn't give us good food, they didn't give us good clothing, they didn't give us good houses, why did they give us such good religion? Have y'all stopped to think about that? Why did they give us such good religion? Give me the old time religion. See, let me tell you something you might not understand. Religion has always been counter-revolutionary. Religion has always been counter-revolutionary. In fact, if you stop to think about it, what religion does is the same thing you're supposed to do, get you to adjust to this life on earth. Because, look, in suffering, there is what? Redemption. Out of suffering, there comes redemption. So what if you don't have food in your house? So what if you don't have heat? This is just a small hotel room you're passing on through. To eternity. To eternity. You understand? I mean, that's religion. That's why religion never leads. Never leads to revolution. Unless you have your own indigenous religion. Unless you have your own. So where they gave it to us because it pacified us. And it still does. And that is why we're the only people where every time you see somebody speaking, it's a preacher. A preacher. You never hear rabbis. You never hear priests leading the white folks. Always leading us, Reverend Andrew Young. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. No. I was with King. I know. King, though, let me give you the final example of that, because I know I'm down in King's hometown. And we could never get nothing going in Atlanta. Look, nothing could ever get going in this city. This was the hardest damn city in the world, even to make black folks aware that was a struggle. This is the end of it, because we only have 5 minutes. This is the end of it. But we must realize that, I know y'all can see that, but I'm just going to do it for free. Political, economic, military, educational, it's one more, religious. Might be enough. Okay. What we do not understand here is this is a social theory. It has to take in account all of these institutions. You must have a political institution, you must have an economic institution, you must have a military institution, you must have an educational, and you must have a religion. And the only time you can have revolution, that's why this country's never been close to revolution. The only time you can have revolution is that these institutions come in conflict. That's what happened in Iran. In Iran, the religious and the educational institutions came in conflict with the military and the political. That's what happened in Iran. Otherwise, it never would have been a revolution. That's another reason I tell you how dangerous education is, contrary to what you all believe, how dangerous colleges are. Every time there is a revolution, the first thing they close down are the universities. The first thing you close down the university. That's your most dangerous institution. People get into that thing. Unfortunately, if we had a revolution, first thing they would open would be our black school. See, that'd be the first thing they open. Now, let me just give you this, what we should be about. Now, this is sort of out of context, but I'm going to push this. I'll tell you why I'm going to push this. I have two ads here. And these ads are taken from Evan. One is black and white bleaching cream. At last, you can have shades lighter, smoother, softer skin with safe, scientific black and white bleaching cream that is not one, not two, but now three times stronger than before. They get lighter. Get three shades lighter, smoother, softer. Now, Nat Denola bleaching cream is double strength, lighting skin even faster. Let me tell you something. Have you ever stopped to think that you have never seen an ad that said darken your skin? Have you ever thought about that? Never have you seen in your life an ad to say this skin is three times stronger. This cream is three times stronger. It darkens the skin. Not that it wouldn't be bankrupt in a week, but at least we should be able to see one. Okay? Now, on what we should do. Here are my recommendations. One. First recommendation I'm making is up to the people from this point on. We must place the interests of our race above all other interests. Yes. Above all other considerations. That's the first one. In anything we do and think, we should first ask a simple question. Does it help or does it hurt the race? That's number one. Place the interests of our race. Two, we should begin to sanction and punish those blacks who operate against our interests. Right. Begin to sanction them and punish them. Three, that we should sanction completely and refuse to support those blacks who marry and cohabit with whites, yeah, or members of other races. Yeah. All right? Now, I'm talking about we should immediately begin to boycott from this day on Dinah Silverstein, who you all call Dinah Ross, O.J. Simpson, Leslie Uggams, Bill Russell, Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte, and we should really put on a type of probation. I haven't worked this one out yet. People such as Dan Carroll, Lena Horne, Red Fox, Sammy Davis Jr. And I'm saying to you, now you all might think this is revolutionary. This is not. This is really not. It's just that it's got to be articulated. Now y'all do with it what you want to. Four, here's one going to lose a lot of people. Okay. We should make a conscious effort to darken the race. We should begin to make a conscious effort to darken the race. By accepting skin color as a criterion of adoption, we adopt children. Give that black child equal chance. Please. The black, you'd be surprised, you go in these agencies, see all these little black here, nobody wants. I'm not real black, no question on what they are. Nobody wants them. All right? Also, when you begin to look for a lover or a mate, look, don't reject the sister or the brother because they're dog. You know, in 1980, we got to be talking like this, but yeah, okay? Five, no black can be considered a leader or hold a leadership position who marries outside the race.
That's right.
No black. Six, we must stop using black in negative terms. We got to stop doing that. Stop using that and don't. We must stop using the word nigger, Tom, and all that. You know, if you look at the image of Uncle Tom, it's an old black man with gray hair. The image of Aunt Jemima is an old black woman with a bandana on her head. Our grandmothers know. That's the image they gave us of Aunt Jemima. Now, we must begin, number seven, we must begin to consciously expose our children to positive black images. And those of us who are professionals must begin to spend some time in at least independent schools after school on Saturdays and Sundays with our black children. We must begin to show them positive images. Number eight, we also must have artists. We must begin to develop artists like this who have shown strong black images and things like that. One of the things that we're running into in terms of religion, and I don't care what you say, you have to believe God is white. Every picture you've ever seen of God, he's white. Unless you've been at the Institute of the Black Madonna, down at the Black Madonna. And you think, you probably think, I ain't gonna tell you what you think about that, but everybody think. I remember even in our church when the fans had Jesus pictures on them. So if you get, you know, subliminal suggestion, you know, you get one, and that white Jesus just flashing in front of your head, you know, that's cool. I'm going to end by reading something to you, especially to you as black students, because I really love you very much. I really do. I love you very much. And I just have so much faith in you. I really do. I have so much faith in you because in you I see me. And the mere fact that, you know, that I don't think that we're any different than anyone else. I just think we'll rise above our problems. This is the poem, and they turned it into a song. And I want you to listen to it carefully. To be young, gifted, and black. Oh, what a lovely, precious dream. To be young, gifted, and black. Open your heart to what I mean. In the whole world, you know, there are a million boys and girls who are young, gifted, and black. And that's a fact. You are young, gifted, and black. We must begin to tell our young. There's a world waiting for you. You will end up where the world began. So when you're feeling real low, there's a truth you should know. To be young, gifted, and black, that's where it at. To be young, gifted, and black, oh, how I love to know the truth. There's a world without a fact. There's a world without a fact, and I'm hunted by my youth. But my joy of today is that we all will be proud to say, to be young, gifted, and black, and that's a fact. Alusha continue, Lashima Tachinda Bablishika. Sante Sana.
Yeah. That's right. Young, gifted, and black. Yeah, I tell you. Brother Jay, what do you got to say?
Hey, all I can say is, man, this thing, Bobby Wright dropped that jewels many years ago, and that we are in the people are still in the same psychological condition, and maybe worse than when he dropped it.
Exactly.
That just tells us how, for some reason, we ain't being taught right. You know,
no, you're right.
They say that the school is supposed to educate us, and the church is supposed to educate us, and that our parents are supposed to educate us. Well, somebody is doing a bad damn job. Because it seems to me that the Negro, in all honesty, in a lot of ways, is becoming sicker and sicker and sicker. And loving this white man more and more and more. And willing to give this white man more of himself each and every day. It's basically, in all honesty, a damn shame.
It is. And it's all over. It's all over.
Yeah, I mean, if you saw it over in Africa, I mean... The Sky Daddy nonsense over there, I know, is just as bad, and if not worse, than here.
Yes.
And that's saying a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
That's saying a hell of a lot. So I don't know what we're going to do, Brother Oshie, other than people like ourselves who have like minds coming together and saying the hell with the rest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really coming to that point.
Yes,
because
it is.
If we continuously try to save these psychos, we are going to become sick. Because the bottom line is most Negroes don't want to be saved. They just want to have a more comfortable position in whiteness.
That's
and
right.
They don't even understand that white
That's
people
right.
don't even want to black hair.
That's
white
right.
people don't have no use for you like he has. He's now trying to make allegiances with others. Because, see, he understands that they're going to be the majority in this country. So, you know, you think Trump is doing something against these Latinos and these Mexicans. What he's really doing is he's trying to weed out the garbage. Always look at the behavior of the Cuban.
Yeah.
Study the behavior of the Cuban that came over here from Cuba and see what they have done. That's exactly what the Puerto Rican is going to do now that Puerto Rico is a hellhole.
Yeah.
Gotta start studying the actions and the behaviors of those who want power and who are tribal.
Right.
That's the one thing we are not as a people is tribal. If we ever became tribal, we could win this.
Well,
but no, we want to be too close to the daddy. So, Osi, I will speak with you on Wednesday. You have the rest of the week. Beautiful.
All right, dear brother.
Dear Dr. Rogers. And I'm, hey, listen. We have to separate ourselves from these psychopaths and figure out ourselves how to liberate and give ourselves sovereignty.
Ashe. Thank you, Brother Jay. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Brothers and sisters, I hope you've enjoyed this tribute to Dr. Bobby Wright. And as you can see, even though he passed away in 1982 and what he wrote was in the 70s, it is still applicable even deeper today than it was when he wrote it. You see where it's coming. And that's why, to me, I'm constantly trying to alert us, get us on the same page in terms of what we as African people need to do, independent of anybody else. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodia family, you have a blessed and wonderful day, and I will see you on Wednesday. Peace, family.